Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast with SN Koman, Head of Emerging Markets Research, EMEA. It's Friday, the 5th of November, 2021, and this week we're discussing the highs and lows of the first week at COP26. The following podcast is intended for professional investors and eligible counterparties only, and not for retail clients. Any content should not be regarded as an offer to conduct investment business or an investment recommendation, but for information purposes only. Essan, all eyes are on the COP26 deliberations, which are now halfway concluded. Can you summarise the key developments as well as the latest positioning on key issues?
Thanks, Una. So yes, the first week of COP26 is history, with a flurry of announcements in the first week, but primarily it's been more pledges, which is not equal to implementation. So walking through the key announcements that we have witnessed, the first, a host of new net zero carbon neutrality announcements have been made this week. India by 2070, Nigeria by 2060, and Thailand as well as Vietnam by 2050, which all these pledges follow peer pressure. Although, as with other countries, many with conditions and without details. Separately, the US also formally submitted a long-term strategy for net zero emissions by 2050, with Nepal also bringing forward, in fact, by 5 years to 2045, its pledges. For most, however, it was pledging and not implementing, as details were not included. Now, on ambition, India made other commitments such as a jump in renewable energy build-out and a 45% reduction in carbon intensity by 2030. In our view, India's first take on a net zero pledge is probably a start and leaves it with plenty of room to bring the target forward or adjust it upwards. Thailand's goal only applies to carbon dioxide as it retains its 2065 target for other greenhouse gas emissions. And separately, the US rejoined the High Ambition Coalition, which is important because this is the coalition that ensured 1.5 degrees Celsius that was written into the Paris Agreement back in 2015. Now, a contentious issue, Una, is climate finance, which according to the Climate Finance Delivery Plan, the $100 billion climate finance goal is not likely to be achieved until 2023. Yet, for all the rhetoric, there were only a few increases in financial pledges during these early days of COP26. So places like Spain, Denmark, Japan, Norway, Ireland, the UK, as well as Italy, boosted their commitments. Though there is a long way to go here, as the target was missed for 2020, and there is some optimism that the $100 billion probably could be reached by 2022. So in effect, starting in 2023. Switching gears now, you know, at the leadership level, the first few days were dominated by ceremonies and opening statements as world leaders made speeches. And now negotiations on some key issues are beginning in the background, but there has been no real substance thus far to these yet, as most parties and alliances have fallen back to familiar lines. And so on climate ambition, there are whispers that the five-year cycle of updating pledges is not sufficient. So perhaps more upgrades more regularly. Also, the text for Article 6 is out, noting here, you know, that Article 6 is designed to enable voluntary contribution in implementing so-called NDCs, and that's nationally determined contributions, with the view that the trading emissions reductions between two countries can provide the foundations for an international carbon market. And so therefore, COP26, there has been real hope that this could gain traction. But unfortunately, so far, many options are actually yet to be decided. Elsewhere, Una, there has been some traction on dealing with deforestation. So over 120 countries representing more than 85% of the world's forests have committed to halt and reverse forest loss and land degradation by 2030, while delivering sustainable development and promoting an inclusive rural transformation program in a Glasgow Leaders Declaration of Forests and Land Use. And the declaration comes with around $19 billion of pledge finance from both the public as well as private sector for forest-related actions, such as conservation, development policies, and reducing vulnerabilities in emerging markets between 2021 and 2025. So on net, Una, we would say that there have been multiple efforts that previously to halt deforestation, but these have fallen by the wayside as enforcement and politics has gone in the way. So this is a watch and space development. Finally, there has been some movement on methane. So the US formally launched the Global Methane Pledge to reduce methane by 30% by 2030 from 2020 levels. And over 100 countries have signed up But there are notable absences here from the likes of China, India, and Russia. So plenty, Una, that has been announced from a mix of high and low lights from COP26 thus far.
And with the heads of state exiting Glasgow, what are the real issues at COP26 that negotiators have to come to some form of agreements on?
Yes, Una, so negotiators have a long list of thorny issues to deliberate on. Some are straightforward and have made headlines, and others are quite technical and quite negligible, but also quite consequential. Of course, finance and progress on Article 6 are top of mind. So on finance, many emerging markets have reiterated the need for financial support from developed markets in their opening statements at COP26 this week. And there are louder calls for a formal definition of climate finance as the main negotiations begin. We view that this is probably unlikely to be a precise definition to come out of it, because developed markets still want to keep the interpretation quite wide. Separately on Article 6, so draft negotiation text for all three parts, so technically that's Articles 6.2, 6.4 and 6.8, have been released, and the focus so far has been on establishing a guidance framework. So that is what counts as a cooperative approach which parties may participate, and how corresponding adjustments could be made. Now, the elephant of how to transfer activities and credits from the previous clean development mechanism looms large, and we view a lot of compromise will be required in this area. Finally, other issues are being discussed in line with the agendas of the various negotiation tracks, and a key success could pertain to coal, with clever wordsmithing producing potentially a coal deal rife with loopholes, and any methane pledge really needs buy-in from the largest producers, particularly the likes of China, India, as well as Russia.
And finally, Asan, what can we expect from the outcome of COP26 deliberations once they conclude on the 12th of November?
So, Una, for the floors, we would say that annual COP meetings are probably the best forum to force change from governments as regulators, the supply side from corporates, as well as the demand side from us as individuals. And there is no doubt that the growing imperative to decarbonize will have a bigger impact as time goes on. But we are of the view that new narratives around climate and energy are needed if the goal is to really have reliable as well as affordable energy with less CO2 emissions. As what is clear for us is that at the current juncture, the narrative is leading to the fact that the less popular fossil fuels become, the more they are costing, which is the worst outcome. That is, you have higher energy prices and the same, not less, CO2 emissions. Indeed, the IEA's landmark report back in March this year that stated that to get to net zero by 2050, in line with the Paris Agreement targets, there needs to be no investment in new fossil fuel supply immediately. Yes, that would be fine if the fossil fuel line bending down was perfectly mirrored by a zero carbon energy line rising to eclipse it, which is purely theoretical as a phenomenon today. And so to this end, the pulse of the conversation seems to be that COP26 discussions are shifting to focus less on negotiation and more on acceleration and accountability and transparency, as well as investment. And in this environment, the importance of the private sector and the climate investment through lenders like ourselves, it can bring to the table, will only likely grow. And so perhaps a more immediate consequence of the energy crunch suggests that the transition may involve medium to long-term reliance on fossil fuels rather than fearing them, with the focus on making the extractor cleaner and more efficient while awaiting for the engineering challenges around the renewables-led future to be solved, would likely to take the most optimal approach. So in practice, this will probably entail a faster build-out of renewable power generations, the likes of solar and wind, increasing battery capacity, and accelerating hydrogen projects in order to manage the issue of renewables intermittency, upgrading transmission as well as distribution infrastructure, and ultimately incentivizing households to switch from gas to electric heating or heat pumps. Of course, the question remains on who will pay for such upgrades and in what time frame. And questions like these, we are hopeful that the remainder of COP26 will address.
Thanks very much for sharing that insight, Asan. Have a wonderful week, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Una. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this MUFG Global Markets podcast. Rate, review and subscribe, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for more information. Come back next week for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.